of another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Marge Lauber, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the current issues of the Niagara Gazette and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The first issue we're reading from is from Tuesday, August 11th, and there's a 99th Street family. They were pushing for relocation. Three of their son's medical care providers are now refusing to visit Daniel and Jocelyn McKernan's home near Love Canal in Niagara Falls due to concerns about potentially hazardous materials found on site. And while the situation is distressing enough on its own, the McKernans are absolutely incensed by another issue, the lack of empathy being shown by state officials who insist it's okay for them to keep living inside their 99th Street home, despite recent test results they consider highly alarming. I am shocked at their lack of regard or care for our family or the public, Jocelyn McKernan said. A private contractor excavating dirt as part of a pool installation project uncovered industrial waste materials in the McKernan's backyard last month. Follow-up tests performed by the New York State Department of Conservation. Found the exposed waste contained potentially hazardous heavy metals, including lead, copper, nickel, and hexavalent chromium, which is a metallic element widely used in industrial applications. So according to the McKernans, outdoor test results show the presence of semi-volatile chemicals consistent with waste found at the nearby Love Canal and containment site, including dinibutyl, acetone, there's some kind of chemicals. A sump pump test revealed the presence of a wide range of heavy metals, organic related to Love Canal and other chemicals, including chloroform, alpha BHC, delta BHC, deuterium, and gamma BHC, more commonly known as lindane, which has been used as both a pesticide and a pharmaceutical treatment for lice and scabies. The McKernans participated in a conference call on Thursday with the DEC attorney and representatives from the state regulatory agency and the New York Department of Health. So during this conference call, the DEC and DOH informed the McKernans that the preliminary investigation of materials found on the property did not constitute for an immediate or accurate threat to public health that would require relocation. Additional testing of the indoor air quality, sump pump, and portions of the homeowner's yard will be conducted to further ensure the health of residents and fully protect it, the DEC said. Now, in other news, the Amazon is asking the county IDA for $3 million more in incentives. With its new Niagara County Fulfillment Center at 8995 Lockport Road almost ready to open, Amazon is requesting an additional $3 million in sales tax incentives for the Niagara County Industrial Development Agency. In a recent letter sent to the agency last week, Amazon's Director of Economic Development, Brad Griggs, said that the amount of incentives be increased from $26 million to $29 million. Greg said that since the county IDA's initial approval of nearly $124 million in various tax incentives, the construction scope increased due to advancements in material handling equipment systems and updates to the new generation facility design, which resulted in $37.5 million in additional purchases. Beyond that was stated in Amazon's original application. The amount would put construction costs for the town of Niagara Center at around $587.5 million. The request is driven by the evolving operation requirements of the facility, as well as broader cost pressures during the construction period. Griggs' letter states, For the reasons above, we respectfully request an additional $3 million in sales tax exemption benefits to account for the increased construction scope and associated cost escalation. The matter will be considered at this Wednesday's IDA meeting, and IDA Board Chairman Jason Krempa said they could need to balance its benefit to the community with the overall cost of the abatement. And in other news, North Tonawanda has received a portion of $430 million awarded by the state to make water and sewer infrastructure improvement projects more affordable for communities statewide. The Environmental Facilities Corporation Board of Directors approved low-cost financing and state and federal grants that empower local governments to modernize aging systems without passing high costs on to local taxpayers. Investments project public hearing and environment reduce further with future risks and support good-paying jobs. Affordability means investing before problems become a crisis, Governor Kathy Hochul said. That's why we're taking historic investments to help communities modernize their water infrastructure, protect public health, and keep costs low for families across New York. The city of North Tonawanda will receive $1.5 million for the planning, design, and construction of new green infrastructure stormwater management practices and separate storm sewers along Oliver Street. Funding is provided, though, through the Clean Water and Drinking Water State Revolving Funds, a mix of state and federal dollars that deliver more than $1 billion in low-cost financing and grants annually to New York communities. And then through the state's Water Infrastructure Improvement and Intermunicipal Water Infrastructure Grants, proven vehicles for affordability that have saved taxpayers more than $8.3 billion statewide since 2015. And then other news, the county is awarding a grant funds for septic system work. So Niagara County has received funds from New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation to participate in the state septic system replacement fund. The program is designed to improve water quality by providing funds to counties to assist homeowners with replacing cesspools and septic systems that are adversely affecting designated water bodies. Niagara County has been awarded $175,000 to provide septic system repair or replacement funding for eligible properties, which is in addition to the $200,000 previously awarded. And do you know that the blood crisis is persisting? So the Red Cross is asking for donors. They want to urge donors of all blood types to act now to make an appointment to give blood or platelets amid the ongoing national blood crisis. Just three additional donors at every blood drive could help further stabilize the blood supply and ensure patients continue receiving life-saving. So they have, August 19th from 1 to 6 p.m. at South Lockport Fire Company on Transit Road. You can go to on August 22nd, 8 a.m. to noon at St. John DeSalle at 8477 Buffalo Avenue, Niagara Falls, or August 24th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the New Fay Town Hall Community Center at 2737 Main Street if you want to donate blood. So let's move on to our next issue, which is Wednesday, August 12th. So Lewiston people are fed up with the flooding. Lewiston resident Sharon Bland is one of many in the town dealing with flooding on her property. During town floods earlier this month, a 150-foot-long drainage ditch at Bland's Lower River Road home filled with water that did not move for hours. She spent a night waiting around her yard trying to remove debris and get the water draining. The ditch's drainage pipe is only 12 inches wide, with all the buildup water not getting through fast enough. Hundreds of flies also swarmed around her property, with Bland spending days trying to kill them. She said she also got rashes from spending time in her ditch. "We feel like we're abandoned," Bland said, adding she had talked with more than 300 locals over the years, in person and through social media groups, about this. "We feel like we're paying more and getting less and less help." She does not have flood insurance to cover damages since FEMA designates the land along the lower river flowing into Lake Ontario as having a 1% annual chance of flood hazards. A neighbor also had heavy flooding in her backyard. Blaine has tried to get the town to maintain this ditch for the past 4 years to little success. To help getting something done about it, Blaine has now started a change.org petition demanding that Niagara County's outdated water and sewer infrastructure be fixed. Also, there's homelessness on the rise now. The number of homeless people in an area that includes Niagara, Orleans, and Erie counties rose by 81% between 22 and 24, according to a report from the New York State Comptroller's Office. The report says contributing to the rise in homelessness are eviction proceedings, lack of affordable housing, and increased rents, among others. The report says the number of homeless in Niagara, Erie, Orleans, Genesee, and Wyoming counties was 1,549 in 2024. The report titled New Yorkers in Need, Homelessness in New York State, says the unhoused population grew to about 200 people in January of 24. The number of unhoused children grew at a staggering rate, 1,900% between those 2 years. The rate also grew significantly among unhoused families over those 2 years, 1,100%. Although the total number is among the lowest in the state, a rate of homelessness among children and families is by far the highest, outpacing this rate in New York City and the overall statewide rates by about tenfold. And then there was another article, it's a warning ignored. So Patricia and Clarence Cox have worried for years about the possibility of the large tree in front of their home toppling over. And then it happened last month. The couple was inside their home in the 1100 block of 17th Street in Niagara Falls on July 18th when they heard a strange and unsettling noise. Patricia said it sounded to her like the neighborhood was about to get hit by a tornado. I've never heard a sound like that before in my life, and it scared me so bad, Patricia said. As she approached a window to look outside, she did not see a funnel cloud. Instead, Patricia saw a tree coming her way. We ran because I saw the tree in the window, and I said, "It's coming down." I said, "Honey, that tree has fallen on us." The couple rushed outside and over to a neighbor's house, where they got their first look at the large tree leaning up against the side of their home, covering the front entrance and several windows. At first, Patricia thought her home was also on fire before she realized the downed tree cut a utility line, causing it to fall into the lawn and smolder. Patricia said, and her husband had feared the possibility that a stiff wind or strong storm could bring the tree down. They believed that they had the city acted sooner, the situation would have been avoided years ago. While the city employees did come out a couple of times to take a look at the tree, it did patch part of the sidewalk. The tree's roots had done damage, Cox said, and they never attended to the tree itself. Due to its condition, Cox said she considered the tree a safety hazard just waiting to happen. I said so many times, you guys need to get rid of that tree instead. Eventually, that tree is going to fall, Patricia said. Philip Wells, a spokesperson for Mayor Robert Rizzanto's office, said neither the city's Department of Public Works nor the city's 311 complaint system had a record of complaints about the tree in question during Rizzanto's tenure in office. Patricia insists that she and her husband called the city numerous times in hopes of having the tree removed. She provided the newspaper with copies of emails she sent, one in 2023 to County Council Vincent Cawley and another in 24 to Niagara County Legislator and Minority Leader Jeffrey Elder. Sometimes something needs to be done about this tree immediately, she wrote in her email to Cawley. We are taxpayers. I have had my daycare business at my home for 27 years. In her email, she attached several photos and pleaded, this is a tree that is killing my front yard. Cawley recalls talking about the tree with a couple during a visit he made to the house after he received the email. He also provided the Gazette with a copy of the follow-up emails from September 20th, which sent the mayor and city administrator Anthony Rizzuto and encouraged administration to give the Cox family tree issue. And it's a pretty big tree. It doesn't look like it did a real lot of damage to the house, but it's huge. And they show firemen walking up to it. And it's near the street, and it's leaning right on top of their house, but it doesn't look too damaging. hopefully. And in other news, you may have heard this. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers may soon be outfitted with gloves that can deliver painful electric shocks intended to gain compliance and combative individuals. So ICE plans to spend up to $20 million to purchase thousands of conductive distraction and de-escalation devices for officers and agents by March, according to a notice published Monday by the Department of Homeland Security. The devices are known as the GLOVE, which stands for Generated Low Output Voltage Emitter, and are manufactured by Compliant Technologies, LLC of Lexington, Kentucky. They have been used in recent years by some jails and police departments. DHS said Tuesday that it was working on a response to an Associated Press inquiry and offered no immediate comment. Jeff Nicholas, the founder of CEO and of Compliant Technologies, wrote in an email, "Unfortunately, we are unable to speak on the subject." The notice said the solicitation for a no-bid contract will be published by early as this Friday. Well, so in other news, but first of all, you are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Niagara Gazette and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. So there's a rabies vaccine that's returning to Niagara counties. Oral rabies vaccine baits will again be distributed across Niagara County and Western New York through September. The effort is part of a nationwide cooperative program conducted by the United States Department of Agricultural Wildlife Service Program to prevent the spread of wildlife rabies in the eastern United States. The late summer distribution is in addition to the spring distribution completed in May to strengthen regional rabies prevention. Baiting will occur through aerial distribution using a low-flying fixed-wing aircraft, helicopters, and ground baiting by hand in selected areas. Distribution is weather-dependent and may be adjusted due to inclement conditions. Fixed-wing aircraft operations are scheduled through August 21st and will distribute RABORAL, Aberal, VRG sachets across rural areas. Helicopter operations are scheduled for September 14th through the 19th and will distribute UNRAB baits across suburban areas. So Pendleton, in other news, wants Greenway funds for their newest park. The town of Pendleton is looking to acquire Niagara River Greenway funds to carry out tennis court renovation work at a future park site. The town is in the process of acquiring DePaul Park from the State Canal Corporation as it lies along the Erie County Canal within the Erie Canal National Heritage Corridor, Pendleton. Officials want to resurface two existing tennis courts and convert a third into four pickleball courts. We have a roller hockey court, install a fence around the court area, and improve the asphalt connections in the park. Pendleton's requesting $150,000 in Greenway funds while contributing the remaining $245,309 of the project cost. Of the $395,309 project amount, $377,709 will go towards construction, while the remaining $17,600 will go to planning. Clarence Center based American Paving and Excavating was awarded at a $367,709 contract for this work back in January. Okay, let's have some other different type of interesting news. This is My Life as a Frog. Mary Hunt, who's an everyday cheapskate. She says, "I've been told if you attempt to pop a frog into a pot of boiling water, he'll jump out every time. But if you put the little fellow into a pot of cold water, set it on a low flame, and warm it slowly, he'll sit back, relax, and let you cook him to death. The frog is so impressed by the nice, warm, cozy feeling, he doesn't pay attention to what's going on. Before he knows it, what hit him? Bam! Fresh frog soup. Well, for many years, I had frog mentality when it came to my first assortment of credit cards. Oh, I was never so foolish as to make a single credit card purchase for something really big or expensive, like a boat or a car, Not even I could tolerate that boiling pot. When I jumped into the pot, it was cool, a terrific environment filled with freedom and options. My credit cards bridged that tiny gap between what we had and what we needed to enjoy the lifestyle we'd chosen. It was convenient, socially acceptable, and amazingly simple. I didn't notice a gradual rise in temperature. At some point, our monthly credit purchases exceeded the amount we could repay within the grace period. Maybe I flinched the first time we revolved, but soon cozied up to the warming condition. By the time I was fully cooked, I'd accumulated more than $100,000 in unsecured debt, including credit cards, personal loans, debt consolidation loans, and installment loans. Ouch. You have no idea how many times I've asked myself how in the world I could let that happen. My only explanation is that it happened a little bit at a time, and so gradually I didn't notice. I didn't make unusually large exotic purchases. I just overspent consistently, adding new debt to old debt and revolving all of it from month to month. I pay the interest and fees, but rarely any principal and seldom on time. Thankfully, I did shed my ambitious nature and get out of a rolling boil. And the full 13 years it took to repair the mess, I learned that even if you don't know exactly what you're doing, if you're headed in the right direction, even the baby steps counted. Are things getting a little warm for you? You could be close to the scalding point, and completely oblivious to the condition. Perhaps it's time to take your temperature. Here's a thermometer of telltale signs to determine if you're about to get cooked. You use a credit card to buy day-to-day necessities like food and gas. You pay only the minimum payment on your credit card balance. You're behind in your payments. You frequently receive late notices and pay late fees. You're at or over the limit of your credit cards. You cringe when the phone rings. Your credit report stinks. And you do not know how much you owe or what you spend on interest. If these things seem a little hotter than they should be, I suggest you gather all your strength to perform a most unfrog-like move. Get out. Ribbit. Okay, let's move on to our next issue, which is Thursday, August 13th. And the vacant lot was sold to agencies. The Niagara Falls Urban Renewal Agency, the URA, has approved the sale of four city-owned vacant lots in the South End as part of a larger project to construct 28 single-family homes in the city. The agency unanimously approved the sale of lots at 2440, 2482, and 2499 McKenna Avenue, along with a parcel at 153 22nd Street, to Niagara Falls Neighborhood Housing Services. The Housing Services Agency will pay the URA $1,200 for each of the vacant lots. Mayor Robert Rosano described the McKenna Avenue properties as unusually large, and he said that NFHHS plans to build new single-family homes on the lots as part of the state's Move in New York program. The mayor said the local Housing Services Agency has received conditional approval from New York State Homes and Community Renewal Corporation to build 28 manufactured homes and lots in the city. So Lewiston has a Freedom Tree. It's a 350-year-old oak tree on Lower River Road. But Lewiston, not even the most historic trees in Niagara County are safe from the continued presence of a fungal disease impacting trees across the border. 350-year-old oak tree on Lower River Road, just outside the village of Lewiston, is susceptible to the deadly disease known as oak wilt, which has no cure. To protect it from the infection, the Lewiston Business Savings Oak carried out a vaccination last week, injecting it with a specially formulated systematic fungicide and supplemental nutrients that would protect the tree for a few years. There are no known oak wilt infections in Niagara County yet, said Lee Simmons, owner of Savings Oaks. We hope it will stay that way. It's believed to be the oldest tree in Lewiston. It was a sapling when French explorer Father Louis Hennepin and his crew traveled along the Niagara River in 1678 during the War of 1812. It provided shade among the trail. British forces went along to burn Lewiston in 1813, So later in the 19th century, it was a marker for those traveling on the Underground Railroad, getting the nickname of the Freedom Tree, as it was a freedom seeker's final stop before crossing into Canada. Because of its age, this tree is considered a witness tree, standing as a living connection to the nation's past. Wow. Okay, so another news this issue. There was an impaired driver who faces 7 years in prison for a crash. A Buffalo man faces up to 7 years in prison after pleading guilty to charges related to fatally striking a woman in December. So James Clark, 32, of Buffalo, pleaded guilty on Monday morning before State Supreme Court Justice Deborah Givens to 3 counts of second-degree vehicular manslaughter. Clark also entered a plea to the charges in full satisfaction of the indictment. So on December 27, 25, Clark was operating a vehicle under the combined influence of alcohol and a drug when he hit a pedestrian in the crosswalk and the intersection of Goodrich and Elka Streets in Buffalo. The victim, 45-year-old Wendy Jasper, was taken by ambulance to Buffalo General Hospital, where she died from the injuries. Clark faces a maximum of 7 years in prison, one sentence is September 14th, and he remains held without bail. And then there was a father and a son accused of using child's ID and a $2.25 million fraud. Wow. A father and his son, who defrauded several banking institutions of more than $2.25 million, have been charged in a 19-count federal indictment. Taleb Hassan, 75, and Meza Khan, 48, both of Pittsburgh, face charges of a conspiracy to commit bank wire fraud and access device fraud, access device fraud, and aggravated identity theft. The charges carry a maximum penalty of 30 years in prison and $1 million fine, according to the U.S. Attorney Michael D'Amico. Between 2012 and July 2024, Khan and Hassan, along with co-conspirators, operated what's known as the synthetic identity fraud scheme, according to the indictment. The schemes often target children, who tend to utilize and monitor their credit less frequently. So Khan and Hassan and their co-conspirators illegally obtained valid Social Security numbers that belonged to real individuals and used the numbers to create synthetic identities, meaning without the knowledge or permission of the real owner. They used the synthetic identities to submit approximately 1,072 online applications to financial institutions for credit and debit cards. Khan and Hassan rented apartments in the Rochester area of New York and used them as mailing addresses for the synthetic cards. After collecting the credit and debit cards, Khan and Hassan and the others used the cards to make purchases at retail stores such as Apple, BJ's, and Sam's Club, as well as their own businesses, including Lucky Beverage, Chili Express Mart, and Easy Food Market. They also used the cards to pay for the property taxes of 3 Rochester properties. They then used fraudulent checks to make payments toward the balances of the synthetic cards in order to temporarily increase the synthetic card spending limits. Ultimately, the full balance owed on the cards was not paid, causing damage to the credit ratings of the victims and losses to the financial institutions, including American Express, Bank of America, Barclays Bank, Delaware, Capital One, J.P. Morgan, Chase Bank, Citibank. The total loss of financial institutions is approximately $2,257,697. Wow. And if you're interested, there's some dates ahead. On Wednesday, September 2nd, Cataract Surgery Lunch and Learn. Free to attend, enjoy a lunch on us and a presentation of the latest advances in cataract surgery by one of our surgeons. Hosted by Fitch, Endel, and Elmberg Eye Care, it will be held at My Tomato Pie at 3055 Niagara Falls Boulevard in Amherst. And you have to make reservations, I guess, so you have to RSVP at 1-800-309-2020. And then Saturday and Sunday, September 5th and 6th, there's a fall flea and vendor show from 9 to 3. There's a huge selection of toys, glass, jewelry, antiques, hidden treasures, and more. And that'll be at 2660 Saunders Settlement Road, Route 31 in Sanborn. And if you want to be a vendor there or for more information, you could call Bonnie at 716-957-4851. Other news, The defense in Charlie Kirk's killing says shooter hit the intended target. The man charged with killing Charlie Kirk shouldn't get the death penalty because the shooter hit the intended target and no one else was endangered when the activist was shot from a rooftop as he addressed a crowd of thousands at an event in Utah last year, his lawyer said. Defendant Tyler Robinson's attorney said the bullet traveled above the crowd, and prosecutors have not proven that he knew others who attended Kirk's event at Utah University on September 10th were in danger, a potential aggravating factor under state law that would make it a capital crime. The only evidence presented supports that the bullet traveled above, not through the crowd, the defense attorneys wrote in documents filed late Tuesday as the defense tries to block the case from proceeding to trial. The defense lawyers also disputed claims that Robertson targeted Kirk over his political views. Prosecutors allege Robinson told his roommate that he killed the activist because he had enough of his hatred. But the defense said that it was not enough to prove what motivated Robinson after searches of his apartment computers and telephone failed to produce anything beyond that one statement. Prosecutors last month presented what they call overwhelming evidence against Robinson, including DNA tests that tied him to the suspected murder weapon, and apparent confessions by the defendant. Well, I think if you kill somebody, that you should, you know, get punished for it. So anyway, so the target of watching her choose a heartbreak, something different. How about Annie Lane? She's like a Dear Abby. So she said, "Dear Annie, my granddaughter has a boyfriend who keeps cheating on her 3 times now. And those are only the times I know about. Each time she takes him back, swearing he's changed. I am old enough to know how that story ends. She's smart and kind, and I hate watching her with someone who doesn't treat her the way she deserves. I've bitten my tongue up until now. It's her life, after all, and she's entitled to her own decisions. But I don't have the heart to sit quietly through this when it inevitably happens again. How do I get her to see what I see before she wastes any more time with him?" So, Annie says, "Dear watching, you can share your opinion, but you can't control someone else's actions. And with a granddaughter, you especially can't order her heart around. Tell her once, plainly, and without repeating it every visit. You see a pattern, and you worry about her. Then let her draw her own conclusions on her own timeline. You're better off saving your energy for being there for her when she's ready to see it herself." Well, and the next from State and Region News, Fredlin was found guilty of killing his daughter. In Elizabethtown, Luciano Fredlin has been found guilty of the murder of his 9-year-old daughter, Melina. The 46-year-old Montreal man has been on trial in Essex County Court for charges of second-degree murder and concealment of a human corpse since July 23rd for the death of the girl last summer. Melina Fredlin was found dead in a shallow body of water off of State Route 74 near the Short Swing Trailhead in the town of Ticonderoga on July 20th, 25. Closing arguments from the prosecution and defense were heard Monday before the jury went to deliberation later that afternoon. Deliberations lasted a little over an hour before the jury came back with a guilty verdict for both the second-degree murder and concealment of a human corpse. Fredlin had no reaction when the verdict was read. Fredlin's sentencing is now scheduled for October 14th in Elizabethtown, and he will be remanded to Essex County Jail in the meantime. Fredlin faces a minimum sentence of 15 years to life in prison with a maximum sentence of 25 years to life. The concealment of a human corpse charge could add 1.75 years to the sentence as well. The sentence Fredlin receives will be at the discretion of Essex County Judge Titania Coffiner. So, another news. AG warns New Yorkers of gold bar scam targeting seniors. So, the State Attorney General Lieta James, issued a consumer alert warning New Yorkers of increasing common gold bar scams, providing tips to protect themselves. These scams usually start with a fake pop-up message on victims' computers, claiming their computer or financial accounts have been compromised or linked to criminal activity. The scammers convince the victim to give them remote access to their computer and then persuade the victim to convert their money into gold bars to protect their life savings. These gold bars are later collected and laundered by the scammers. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Niagara Gazette on the Niagara Frontier Reader Reading Service. Let's move on to our next issue, which is from August 14th. So I guess Hochul wasn't planning to visit Niagara County. So in a press event in Chautauqua County on Thursday, that was the 13th, Governor Kathy Hochul told reporters she's letting experts handle the ongoing radiological investigation taking place in Niagara County. She said, "I have seen people go up there and politicize or cry for help. I'm not that kind of person. I put in the people on the ground, the experts," she said, according to the Buffalo News. The question of Hochul visiting Niagara comes after Republican gubernatorial candidate Bruce Blakeman met with impacted town of Niagara residents and local state officials on Saturday. Blakeman accused Hochul of failing to take charge during what he said he considers a crisis facing local homeowners. "Last time I checked, she was from this region, but she doesn't act like that anymore," he said on Saturday. So there's a Bitcoin scheme going on in Niagara Falls. Bitcoin, a man secretly used company computers to mine cryptocurrency for himself. So a Washington State man is admitted to stealing more than $53,000 worth of Bitcoin from a Niagara Falls company after secretly redirecting about 100 computers he had been hired to operate for the company. Christopher Rankin, 40, pleaded guilty Thursday before U.S. Magistrate Judge Michael Romer to transmitting a program, information, code, or command to a protected computer and causing damage, which carries a maximum penalty of 1 year in prison and a fine of $100,000, according to U.S. Attorney Michael D'Amico. In July 21, Rankin was hired by the Falls company to mine Bitcoin, a process in which powerful computers perform calculations to help verify Bitcoin transactions in exchange for Bitcoin rewards. While the company's computers were normally connected to a mining pool, where many computers work together and share the Bitcoin they earn, prosecutors said Rankin secretly took control of about 100 of those company computers and redirected them to a mining pool he had credited. He then sent the Bitcoin earned by those computers to digital wallets that he controlled. Well, and in other news, keeping the faith. So the Vatican reserves closure decree for Wilson's Our Lady of the Rosary Parish. The Vatican has reversed another Diocese of Buffalo closure decree for Niagara County Church, this time in Wilson. Our Lady of the Rosary at 345 Lake Street received the news that its closure decree was revoked in late July, with the Vatican's Dicastery of Clergy finding that the diocese did not follow the proper discernment process regarding the closure's impact, among other canon violations. The church also received a decree stating that its $716,454 in assets will not go towards the diocese's $150 million sexual abuse settlement. "Our committee, as well as the community, is ecstatic," said Parishioner Michael Moley, the procurer of Our Lady of the Rosary's appeal process. "We've had an overwhelming response from the community in favor of keeping the church open, from the village board to other Protestant churches. Our Lady of the Rosary is part of the St. Brendan on the Lake family and includes St. Bridget in Newfane and St. Charles Borromeo in Alcott, as well as the Central Niagara Catholic family that includes Our Lady of the Lake in Barker and All Saints and St. John the Baptist in Lockport. The only Catholic church for 7 to 14 miles. Our Lady of the Rosary provides a food pantry and preschool program for village residents. When it was included in the diocese list of 78 closures as part of its Road to Renewal initiative in June of 24, one of seven in Niagara County listed, Well, Lisa, they immediately appealed to the Vatican to stop the plan. The Secretary for Clergy announced in April 25 that it would review its case among many other Western New York churches, including All Saints in Lockport and St. John de Sales in Niagara Falls. St. Jude the Apostle in North Tonawanda had also had his closure decree overturned by the Vatican this past May. Though its request for renewal happened after the initial deadline for appealing the bishop's decree had passed, the committee working to help Our Lady of the Rosary Open spent the last 2 years sending documentation to the Holy See explaining why it should remain open. They were a financially viable church whose mass attendances had recovered from the COVID-19 pandemic. And in other news, the sheriff said that 43 cameras have been installed across Niagara County. Flock Safety, the surveillance technology company, increasing under scrutiny from lawmakers, civil liberties advocates, and citizens in the U.S., announced Thursday that it's making changes to its platform intended to quell privacy concerns and address documented abuses of its system by some members of law enforcement. The company is one of the nation's largest providers of automated license plate readers, which document plate data and other vehicle characteristics as automobiles pass Flock's cameras. The thousands of law enforcement agencies that contact with the company can search and share that data among jurisdictions to improve inform investigations. Police have credited the technology as an important crime-fighting innovation that helps locate missing people and track suspects in violent crimes. But dozens of cities and agencies have nixed their relationship with Flock amid concerns that the data can be assessed for immigration enforcement or used in unauthorized surveillance. After a flurry of examples surfaced on law enforcement officers misusing the technology for their personal services. In other news, there's a Bangladesh man who pled guilty in fraud scheme targeting the elderly. Why are the elderly always targeted? We must be like, I don't know, they think they're stupid or something. So a resident of Bangladesh faces 20 years in prison after admitting to his role in several fraud committed against Western New York and Ohio residents. And I can't even pronounce his name. His last name is Neon, 24, of Bangladesh, pleaded guilty before Chief U.S. District Judge Elizabeth Wolford to conspiracy to commit wire fraud, which carries a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison. In 2025, Neon conspired with others to commit wire fraud against three victims, including in March of 25, Neon's co-conspirators obtained the credit card information of a 68-year-old woman residing in the Western New York area and placed an unauthorized charge on the card for virus protection software. The woman noticed the unauthorized charge and called a number that she believed belonged to the virus protection software company. So co-conspirators answered the call and fraudulently represented that they were representatives of the virus protection software company and that she needed to give the representative remote access to her computer so that the representative could process a refund. The woman did so, but instead of processing a refund, the co-conspirator transferred $20,000 from her savings account to her checking account without her knowledge or permission. The representative executed the transaction in a way that made it appear as if the representative had accidentally deposited a $20,000 refund into the checking account. The representative then falsely represented that woman and had to return $19,500, instructing her to withdraw the funds in cash and meet Neon in a particular location, which the woman did. Oh, please never do this stuff. So in April 25, a 73-year-old man residing in the Western New York area received an email from the co-conspirator who falsely claimed to be from Geek Squad. The man was told that his Geek Squad subscription was going to be renewed within 12 hours and he was going to be charged $329.99 unless he contacted Geek Squad at a particular phone number. So the man called that number, received a return call from co-conspirator, who falsely identified himself or herself as the Geek Squad supervisor, advised the man he would refund $440. The man was then told that $30,000 was actually refunded to his account and that he needed to give back $28,000 of the refund. The man checked his account and confirmed there was a pending $30,000 deposit. At the instructions of co-conspirator, the man withdrew $28,000 in cash and turned it over to Neon and a co-conspirator at a particular location. Wow. They just keep doing it all the time. So there was a $50,000 Powerball ticket. It was sold last Wednesday. Drawing was sold in Medina. Nice. Let's see what else we have this issue. You are listening to reading articles and features from the Niagara Gazette on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And last but not least, we're going to go to our last issue, which is from Saturday and Sunday, August 15th and 16th. So there was a state of emergency in the falls. So Niagara Falls Mayor Robert Restano has issued a local state of emergency declaration citing neglected properties and deteriorated roadways in the city, along with the city council's failure, if not outright refusal, to approve contracts to address those conditions. The declaration was filed with the state of New York and Niagara County on July 20th. It remains in effect for 30 days and can be extended an additional 30-day increments until it is rescinded by subsequent order. New York State executive law allows the mayor to make the state of emergency declaration. The declaration also allows the mayor to suspend portions of the city charter. So on Wednesday, the mayor issued an emergency order to suspend three portions of the charter that relate to requirements for the city council to approve or ratify contracts and a restriction on budget expenditures. As a result of these suspensions, the mayor entered into contracts with two vendors to provide grass, weed, and brush removal and to resurface the roads. At a special council meeting on July 17th, we asked council to approve contracts for road paving and grass cutting. The council failed to carry that out, the mayor said. Residents are expecting us to carry out those services, of course. So, in other news, four more Marineland belugas arrived at Chicago Aquarium. In Chicago, four more belugas have arrived at Chicago Aquarium on Thursday as part of a plan to move Canada's last remaining captive whales from a shuttered theme park to aquariums in the United States and Spain. The four whales named Caspian, Pikachu, Rain, and Secord were the second group of belugas sent to Chicago's Shedd Aquarium from Marineland from Niagara Falls, Ontario, after initial four arrived in July. There are among a total of 30 whales and four dolphins that will be transported from Marineland after the Canadian government approval of this rescue plan, which might have saved them from mass euthanasia. As early as August 17th, whales remained at Marineland to be moved, though officials have not announced a timeline. Marineland announced in early 23 that it was for sale and closed to the public in late summer of 24. So 20 whales, or 9 tin belugas, and one killer whale have died at Marineland since 2019, according to provincial government data obtained from through the Freedom of Information Law and official statements. So as part of the rescue efforts, the whales have been making their international trips in custom-built slings and temperature-controlled transport containers. A team of experts flew to Canada to meet the whales' previous caretakers once prior and poured over years of their health records in preparation for the trip. This is a very complex and unprecedented rescue effort. This has never been done before, Charles Dixma, the director of animal behavior and training at the Shedd Aquarium, said. Okay, so another news in this issue. North Tonawanda buys two properties for future city use. The City of North Tonawanda Common Council recently approved the purchase of two properties for new uses, one to be a business incubator and the other for more golf course parking. The first property at 405 Payne Avenue is next to the North Tonawanda City Market, and the city bought the building for $300,000 with Mayor Austin Tylek saying that the city plans to turn it into an incubator space for business startups. We saw it as a potential opportunity to expand the market and review source, he said. So Dr. Richard Boundary currently has a dental office in that building having bought the space in 1997, is looking forward to retiring this year. So Tylik said they could not have any potential vendor. They do not have any potential vendors for the building yet, as any applications for the space would have a bidding process. They would be looking for vendors involved with the market as the initial step for the business before eventually moving into different spaces. So, in brief, in Niagara County, let's see, they have a lunch menu. And does it say what days? Do they have the same thing every day? All meals are served with bread, milk, and 1% coffee or tea. Contribution for lunch is $4 for those 60 and older, and $6 for those under 60. So on Monday, they have broccoli and cheese strata, peas and pasta salad, stewed tomatoes, English muffin, and fruit cup. On Tuesday, they have rotini with meatballs and spaghetti sauce, fresh spinach salad, whole grain cinnamon graham crackers, and fresh banana. Wednesday, they had a turkey burger supreme with cheese, lettuce, tomato, onion, pickle, scalloped potatoes. Thursday, turkey cob salad. Friday, bone-in pork chop, minestrone soup with goldfish, California blend vegetables, and wheat dinner roll. Okay. And there's also the Alzheimer's Association in Western New York offers programs to assist caregivers of people living with dementia. They have one of those. You can get in contact with them. So in other news, the Pottage Row Tops $1 million makeover is complete. Tops Friendly Markets has completed a $1 million remodel of its Niagara Falls store at 1000 Pottage Road, marking the company's 52nd major store remodel in the past 6 years. The project is part of Tops Capital Improvement Project, which includes more than $100 million investments across the chain's three-state footprint. Five other Niagara County locations at 5827 South Transit Road, 7200 Niagara Falls Boulevard, and 4235 Military Road, 301 Meadow Drive, and 3949 Lockport Olcott Road were also renovated over the past 4 years. There's no more fitting place to invest in the future of Tops than the community where our story began, said Ron Ferry, president of Tops Market. Refreshing our Pottage Road store just steps from the site of our first modern supermarket that opened in 1962, honors our legacy while reaffirming our commitment to serving Niagara Falls with the best possible shopping experience for generations to come. So, there's an article, I'm going to read this, I think, for the end. It's a nuclear ending to World War II. It's America 250, it's called. So on August 5th, 1945, the United States used the greatest weapon the world had ever seen when the B-29 bomber Anolia Gray dropped Little Boy, which was an atomic bomb, on Hiroshima, Japan, at approximately 8:15 a.m. According to the National Archives, the city was alive with mourning activity when the bomb detonated in a blinding explosion, and as many as 70,000 people were killed instantly. President Harry S. Truman threatened future bombings if Japan did not surrender unconditionally. 3 days later, on August 9th, another 35,000 to 40,000 people died instantly when the U.S. dropped Fat Man and a second nuclear weapon on the city of Nagasaki. The precise death toll for both bombings is unknown, but at least 100,000 people died directly from the bombs, and another 100 died from radiation exposure in the hours and decades later, according to the National Archives. The second bombing swiftly ended the war, with Japanese accepting the terms of surrender just 5 days later, on August 14, 1945, and VJ Day, Victory in Japan Day, was celebrated in the streets across America. While historians debated the decision to use bombs, the American people overwhelmingly supported the decision in 1945. So, also, in August 17th, 76 to 2026. Another one, I Have a Dream. At the conclusion of the March on Washington on August 28th, 1963, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. The lecture mixed portions of King's previous sermons and speeches with statements by other prominent public figures, including Abraham Lincoln. And one of the most iconic passages from the speech, King spoke about the future for his children. He said, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." And also at around this time, the 19th Amendment was ratified. So nearly a century and a half after the founding of the United States of America, women's rights to vote was protected by the ratification of the 19th Amendment on August 18, 1920. And the amendment reads, "The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any other state on account of sex. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation." It was called the Susan B. Anthony Amendment, but many encouraged women were part of the effort, including Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Lucretia Mott, Ida Wells, and Alice Paul. And then to boldly go, NASA's Voyager 2 launched on August 20th, 1977. It is the only human-made spacecraft to observe the solar system's four giant planets up close, discovering new moons and rings. After observing Neptune on August 15th, 1989, its course to leave the heliosphere, a part of space affected by the sun's gravity, and enter stellar space, which it did, November 25th, 2018. The craft is still operational traveling through space. So this month, in August, American history, on August 1st, 1774, the British began implementing the Intolerable Acts, including closure of Boston Harbor, which accelerated the American Rebellion. Then August 20th, 1866, in proclamation, President Andrew Johnson declared the Civil War was over. And August 5th, 1884, Grand Master of Masons in the City of New York, William Bodie, lays the cornerstone of the Statue of Liberty pedestal. August 15th, 1914, the Panama Canal opens. August 25th, 1916, President Woodrow Wilson signs an act establishing the National Park Service. August 2, 1923, amid rumors of corruption in the Department of the Interior, Justice in the Veterans Bureau, President Warren Harding dies of a stroke at 58. August 25, 32, Amelia Earhart completes her non-transcontinental flight across the United States. August 9, 1944, Smokey the Bear debuts as a mascot for the U.S. Forest Service. August 16, 1954, the first issue of Sports Illustrated published. August 1, 1962, the official release date for Amazing Fantasy, number 15, the comic book that introduced Spider-Man. August 7, 1964, passing of the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution permits Lyndon B. Johnson broad authority to expand the Vietnam War without a formal declaration of war. August 27, 1964, was the release of Mary Poppins. August 6, 1965, the Voting Rights Act is signed. August 16, 1977, Elvis Presley died of a heart attack. August 24, 1989, Pete Rose is banned from Major League Baseball for gambling on the sport. August 24, 1992, Hurricane Andrew strikes Florida, one of the most powerful storms in its history. August 30, 1993, The Late Show with David Letterman debuted on CBS. And then August 13, 2016, swimmer Michael Phelps wins his 23rd final Olympic gold medal. So you have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the current issues of the Niagara Gazette. We read from the Niagara Gazette every Saturday at 11 a.m. Your reader has been Marge Lover. I thank you for listening, and you all have a wonderful day.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have a reading of the Dunkirk Observer. Following that at 1 o'clock, we have a reading of some of our Northtown B papers, including Amherst, Clarence, Cheektowaga, Lancaster, and Depew. And then at 2 o'clock, we have the Southtown Bees, which includes Orchard Park, the Hamburg Sun, the East Aurora, and West Seneca papers. Stay with us for these readings and more. You're listening to the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Radio Reading broadcasts daily readings 24 hours a day of newspapers, magazines, and books to people who are blind or have a print disability and are provided reading radios. Radio Ratings broadcast signal is provided at no charge by WNED. From broadcast studios at 1199 Harlem Road, Radio Reading continues our almost 40-year tradition of award-winning service. For more information on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, the following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability, which